Today is June 25th, 1984. I am Carlene Spence and I'm interviewing Mrs. Alice Farrar at 349 Wilmot Avenue. Hi, I'm Carlene. What is your name?
Alice G. Farrar.
How old are you?
90 years old.
Tell a little about your childhood, your family living in Bridgeport.
Now, start a little. What did you say?
Tell me a little bit about your family and your child. How many children were
there? My child. Okay. I came to Bridgeport in 1900. And I went to, my first school was Myrtle Avenue School, the lower grades. And then I came to the old Lincoln School on Stafford Avenue. Then I graduated from the Shelton School up on Wheeler Avenue. And I went to the old Bridgeport High School up on Congress Street. That's now gone. And what else do you want to know? Well, that was my childhood days.
How many children in your family?
My family or my children?
Your family.
My family. I had three brothers and one sister.
Were your parents originally from Bridgeport?
My parents were originally from Virginia, both of them.
And what year did they move here?
In 1900, came to Bridgeport.
Types of jobs your parents had?
My father worked in the Canfield Rubber Company that's no longer here, and my mother was a housewife.
Level of education completed. Did you go to high school?
I went to the Congress High.
Do you know anything about World War I or the Depression?
World War I, I was married during World War I, and I had a brother-in-law that was in service, but other than that, my husband wasn't in service. Just my brother-in-law, World War I.
What about the neighborhood you grew up in? How was it?
I lived in the South End as a youngster when I went to the Myrtle Avenue School. And I moved to the East End, and I lived on Freeman Street, and I went to the old Lincoln School. And I moved to the North End up on Reservoir Avenue, and I went to Shelton School. And then I moved to Wilmot Avenue, where I am now, and I went to the old Congress High School.
What was the relationship between you and your neighbors?
Oh, very well. Got along well with neighbors.
What type of religion are you?
I'm Methodist.
What's the name of your church?
I belong to the Walters Memorial, AME Zion Church. And I was their organist for 50 years. I had charge of their choirs and their choruses and everything for 50 years.
As a teenager, what were some of the things you did for fun in Bridgeport?
For fun? Oh, gosh. Like everybody else, we had house parties. There wasn't too much in those days for fun. Just generally parties, that was all.
What about some of the places of entertainment?
In Bridgeport? I don't think there were any. I don't remember any, unless I wasn't allowed to go to any. I never went to any of the places of amusement that I can remember in Bridgeport. Now, was Pleasure Beach at that time was in operation. We went to Pleasure Beach. They had the merry-go-round and hot dog stands and bathing house and everything at Pleasure Beach then. And then they had the old trolleys that ran up to Savin Rock. All of our church picnics and everything went to Savin Rock for our picnics. And then we used Beardy Park a lot for parties.
Tell about the Depression years and what was it like to live in it?
Depression. Now what years has any year to that?
Depression.
1929, 1920.
Mm-hmm. There was a depression, and there were a lot of people that were in the breadline, I do know. But I was fortunate enough not to have never interfered with me, because at that time my parents were supporting me and they had work. So, but I have seen a lot of people in breadline during the depression.
What were your feelings about World War II right after the...
Say the first word again.
What were your feelings about World War II since it came right after the Depression?
World War II. That's the last war. Is that the last war we had? World War II? Was that the Vietnam War?
No.
World War II, who was in it? I didn't have anyone. I had a brother-in-law in World War II, but other than that, I guess it didn't have any effect on me, but we were worried because of the war.
Did you have Berlin Soup line there?
They did have those lines. I never was in one, but I went to New York a couple of times, and from the train I could see the long lines of people who were in bread line. Now they had those lines that were very important for people who had no work.
Did you or your family lose jobs during World War II?
Oh, at that time my husband was working for the Bridgeport Brass, and he had a very good job, and so I was never in bread line. His job continued right on through the war. He didn't have to go. But I did have a brother-in-law that had to go.
Your brother-in-law went to
Went to work? Service. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did they have food rationing in that time?
Have what?
Food rationing, like they had to give it a certain amount of food at that time.
Really? Seems to me they were at that time. Food was rationed, I know. But it didn't affect me, so I don't remember too much about it.
Oh, your family was well off? They were like middle class?
No, not well off, but there wasn't too many men. My husband didn't have to go because he had a family. See, I had 7 children. And mm-hmm. So they didn't take him because he had to support his family. I stayed home. There were a lot of women at that time that went into the shops. You know, the shops were open for women to work in the shops because the men had gone. And lots of women were working in the shops at that time. And now when I go to the senior citizens, a lot of these women are talking about, you know, my pension is coming today, tomorrow, am I getting my check because they worked in the shops and they're getting pensions now. Mm-hmm. But I didn't work in the shop because I had these girls home and I stayed home.
Mm-hmm. After World War II, what changes took place in Bridgeport?
After the war? Mm-hmm. I don't think there were any drastic changes in Bridgeport.
What about the East End back here now, over this side?
Mm-hmm. No drastic changes after the war, as I can remember. There was plenty of work at that time. And I don't think there was any drastic changes.
How did the Korean conflict affect you and your family?
The Korean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what war is that? Grandson that went was in the Vietnam War, and that was a very bad experience for him. He was there the full time, and he's now doing very well. He's in Miami, Florida now. He's a policeman down there. But he was the only, I think that's the grandson. He lived here in Bridgeport, lived in this house, and he went from here to service. And he told us how terrible it was to see the people shot down and not have enough to eat. So thirsty, they couldn't find anything to drink. It was a pretty bad situation.
What was it like being black in Bridgeport at that time?
It was a pretty rough being black in Bridgeport a few years ago. I have one daughter that there was a Butler's Business School on Broad Street a few years back, across to the library there somewhere. Is it still there? Mm-hmm. Well, I have one daughter that went to Butler's, but she was a mulatto, and I guess they weren't thinking maybe about her being black. I don't know, but she went there. She took business course at Butler's.
Like you're half black, half white?
I'm black. But, you know, black people, you can have a half a dozen in your family, and you can be blacker than this one, you can be a little lighter than this one. That's the way they vary in color. Black families do vary. You don't find all of them the same color. Those I know. Well, anyway, I had one daughter that went to Butler's Business College. She was 2 years older than the next one. Now, she got through Butler's, And then the next one decided she wanted to go to Butler's. And when she went there, they told her they didn't take any black people. So she didn't ever go to Butler's. She went down to Washington to Cortez Peters Business School. Cortez Peters was a black man, and he had a beautiful business school in Washington. So she graduated from Cortez Peters Business School. And when she came back, she worked for the motor vehicle in their office for 30 years. She retired, and now she's a secretary in People's Bank. But she was that product that couldn't go to business college in Bridgeport. And I had a daughter, I have a daughter that's a nurse, and she wanted to enter the hospitals here at that time, and for training. They wouldn't accept any black in the hospital. So she had to go to New York, and she graduated from Lincoln Hospital in New York. She is now, she has the daycare center up on Park Avenue for children, for girls who have babies and want to go to school. She takes care of their babies up there in the daycare center. But there was, Bridgeport has been very prejudiced for schooling for black children, because I had six of them. And I had quite a time getting my children through school because they didn't want to take them. I have one daughter, Geraldine Johnson, who was superintendent of schools. Did you know her? She's retired now, but she has been superintendent of schools here. When she got ready to go to the normal school they had here for teachers, they didn't want her to go because she was black. So she went to normal school in New Haven. So it has been very prejudiced in Bridgeport for black children. It is better now, but the first one has to break the ice and fight pretty hard to get in.
Were you ever discriminated against?
Ever what?
Were you, did you ever face racial discrimination, you yourself?
Well, that you would call that discrimination. That's racial discrimination when you go someplace to apply for a job that is open and they don't take you. That's discrimination.
Where were you personally turned down because of your color?
I haven't been out there, but my children have been out there. That's what I'm saying. It's the same thing. I had seven children, and they have been out there trying to get into some of these schools, and some of them they could not get into. I really think it's better now, I don't know, but it has been rather rough for black children to get into these schools.
How did the East End used to be before now?
The East End used to be very nice. Stratford Avenue was a lovely place to walk for years ago, and you don't dare walk on Stratford Avenue now. When I was an organist for the Zion Church on the corner of Broad and Gregory Street. You know where the Broad and Gregory Street is? South End. And we used to walk from Broad and Gregory on home. It's a little distance, but we got accustomed to walking. The trolley fare was only 5 cents, but we didn't spend the 5 cents. We'd walk from church on up to Fairfield Avenue and straight on out Stratford Avenue, cross the two bridges, and come on home. And we could do it at night after rehearsal. And no fear, never feared a thing. Came on home by myself. And other people, some got lived on Newfield and different places. It was very nice, no trouble. But it's quite different now.
How do you feel about it now?
I'm afraid of it now. I don't walk on Stratford Avenue for anything now. But it has been a lovely avenue. At one time, there were five doctors between Newfield Avenue and Hollister Avenue. There were five doctors. It was the foot doctor and a medical doctor. There was a dentist. And they did very well. Right on the corner of Wilmot Avenue here, we had Dr. James for many years, heart specialist, right on this corner. And his house is a bad-looking spot right now. Of course, he died, and the house was sold, and it's in very bad condition. The narcotics, they say, it's on Stratford Avenue, and that's where the crowd is.
What do you think caused the East End to be like this now?
I'd like to know. I don't know. As some of the doctors grew older or retired, no younger doctors took their places. And as the houses grew older, why, the white population moved out to the north end or somewhere, and the black population moved in, and they were not business people, and they had a lot of kids, tore the place up.
So you think blacks caused the East End to be like this now?
I don't know that it's just the blacks, it's the, we'll say the poor people. There are Spanish people over here too. Right at the corner here is a Puerto Rican store, and it's been here for a while, and they do pretty good business. Right, that house looking right there, you can't see what the trees, is full of Spanish people. So we'll say the poor people came in, and the neighborhood became very dilapidated.
How do you feel about the young blacks of today compared to those of years ago? What changes has taken place between the blacks then and the
blacks of today? I don't think the blacks of today are as energetic as they were a few years ago. A few years ago, the black youngsters were anxious to go to school or anxious for a profession. And today, they're more apt, they just live day by day, it seems. Not all of them, but there are many of them that aren't interested in improving themselves. They don't work that hard in school, and I think that's the problem. I think they don't work hard enough in school. And that some subject that the black kids take, I don't think of what they should take. It's, there's no money in it. They're not taking.
Like what?
Well, when I look at the television and see them spending all their time with the, what kind of dance is this?
Break
dance. Where's the money coming from in that? You know, they're supposed to go to school and learn the fundamentals of reading and writing and arithmetic and thinking of something to make a living. They do a lot of singing, a lot of dancing, they love music, but there's no money there. So I think that's our downfall right now. We're not looking ahead enough for money, for a living. I have a lot of grandchildren. I've got 18 of them. So I am very interested in what the young people are doing for the future. See, the future is very important. They've got to live and they've got to make money.
So what are some of the advice you give to the young blacks of today?
What I am most concerned in is the home life of the blacks. I think a lot of it depends on their parents and their home life. When my kids were in school, because nobody does it now, when they came home at night, everybody brought homework. And nobody turned, of course there was no TVs, there were radios. Nobody turned on that radio until everybody's homework was done. That was homework.
Somebody at your front
door. I guess you'll have.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't think it's the fault of the black children. I think it's the fault of the black family. I think, what did I last say?
But the family having mm-hmm. to do with this.
Yeah. I really think if the black children had a better home life, they'd be better children. The parents, unfortunately, the parents are all working. The mother goes out to work because it takes a lot of money to live. And the father's out to work. And when they come home, they're tired and they can't say who's done the homework. I guess they don't, and who hasn't done the homework. And I think that there's not enough home pressure on the children to make them what we would like to see them be.
So what would you tell them to do for themselves, to try and better themselves?
Tell who? Children or parents?
Black kids.
I would tell them they've got to study harder in school. That is so important. When I read the paper looking for the graduations, you know, there's valedictorians, salutatorians, and all that, I didn't find our children there. And I went through the list, and it's because they did not have enough home pressure, I think, to be there. And it's just too bad because we have a lot of black children in high school. And somebody should have been winning something. And I don't think it's because they're not bright, but they didn't have enough pressure on them at home to study harder and make use of their time, because I don't know how they're going to make a living. You can't make a living off of pennies. It takes a lot of money to live. And the only way you can live is when you have a job that will give you a good salary. That's the way I see it.
Okay, thank you very much.